Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Joining me today is Layla Miller, mother, grandmother, Catholic author, blogger, and co-author of our book, Made This Way, How to Teach Kids About Tough Moral Issues. I always botch the subtitle.
The subtitle's long.
I can't remember it. I know it was Made This Way.
I have to look at the book sometimes. I'm like, what is that word? Tough, hard, moral. Yeah.
Yeah. So Made This Way, How to Teach Kids Talk About Tough Moral Issues. And today we're talking about a tough moral issue. So we're going to talk about the issue of divorce. And I really liked an article you wrote at Catholic Answers a few months ago. It really blew my mind. You made a comparison between divorce and abortion and how the two are justified in similar ways. Not that they're the same exact kind of thing, but that the reasons people give to justify divorce are similar to the reasons people give to justify abortion. And it really hit me because, you know, there's a lot of Catholics who are solid, they're pro-life. Those reasons to justify abortion, they wouldn't be okay with that. But then they'll turn around, those same solid people, and start talking about divorce in this way. And so that was, I like that a lot. I was hoping you could talk more about that today here on the show with us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the death of a family isn't as grave as the death of a murder of a person.
Right.
But it is still the death of a family, which is...
So we'll start right there. It's like the similarities between divorce and abortion and the similarities between the responses, that it is a kind of killing. You're killing this marital life
that
existed, this bond that exists between men and women that you try to sever. I mean, we can't really sever.
It's an attempt to sever it. Mm-hmm. But
it has real effects.
It has real effects. And actually, one child of divorce had written an article a long time ago, and I didn't put this in my article, but she talked about the one flesh union of man and woman. You could think of it even as a mother and a child. I mean, the flesh is together. You know, when you have a baby in your womb, you're flesh on flesh. This is a baby actually attached to your flesh. And then, of course, Christ said marriage is a one flesh union. So anytime you're ripping that living flesh apart, something is dying. I mean, something pretty serious is being lost.
Yeah, because we think about divorce, it's always so antiseptic. Divorce is just filling out paperwork.
Right.
But and maybe this is another parallel with abortion and divorce. I don't want to jump too far ahead. But I think like a lot of people won't think that abortion is wrong as long as abortion is an abstract word related to choice. They don't think it's wrong until they see the ugly reality of what abortion is. Then they're like, oh, yeah, we can't do this. I think something similar happens with divorce. It's like an abstraction. And until you see the grisly reality of the effects, you're not going to be against it. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I always say that Catholics are, and I'm talking about pro-life Catholics, are against divorce in theory, but not in practice.
Really?
And they will say it's terrible, it's awful, we're against it. But then if it is their own family, their own marriage, even friends who are suffering, they will make that exception for the people who they know who are suffering.
It's like the temptation being against abortion until you or your daughter is pregnant. Right. Like it's going to put your conviction to the test.
Exactly. And the thing with divorce is it's not as bloody. It's not as immediate. Like there's, you know, divorce, the effects with abortion as well, but divorce, the real brutal effects tend to come later also in life, even decades later.
Right.
Really tangibly. But you don't see that right away. And then you have the entire culture and including a lot of Catholics who will say it's really okay. It's really okay. So don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But they would never, you know, say that about abortion because we're still pretty uniform on that.
And you've chronicled, let's make sure we're doing all right here. And you've chronicled, these after effects of abortion, of divorce. So you've chronicled the after effects of divorce in an anthology called Primal Loss.
Right. Yeah, and that was a surprise to me because I was one of those Catholics that was like, oh, yeah, divorce is bad. But in the meantime, I had suffering people in my life that I actually, looking back, I realized I wasn't the voice to save that marriage. I was the voice that said, well, you know, your marriage probably not valid anyway. That's kind of a thought that's out there in our minds.
Right.
And so I just thought, well, they're suffering.
So we start to think there's a marriage where it's difficult, and this would be another similarity. When someone says, I'm pregnant, I don't know what to do, I've got X, Y, and Z circumstances, look, I want to be compassionate and just help you. What's the easiest way to get through X, Y, and Z? And maybe we kind of apply that to divorce and say, well, maybe the easiest way through your circumstances is getting an annulment, mm-hmm. or maybe divorce isn't that bad. Right. And so we look at the difficult circumstances rather than the moral object. Like, is yes. this act right or wrong?
Right. And people don't know. And this was actually the final parallel I think I wrote in the article, which was the argument for abortion is, well, it's not really a baby anyway. Mm. And then we often say, well, that's not really a marriage anyway. So what we don't understand is, number one, yes, that's a baby. We know that biologically. We know that objectively.
Right.
Number two, we don't remember that canon law says that marriage enjoys the favor of the law, meaning we are to suppose and presuppose and assume that a marriage is valid
yeah.
until it's proven otherwise in a tribunal. But we tend to jump the gun and say, well, that's why you can go ahead and get divorced and go through the process because it's not real anyway.
Yeah, that's this idea, like a presumption that marriages are not valid. It would make me feel like marriage doesn't even really exist then. Like yeah. what more do we have to do? I mean, I worked in the Office of Marriage and Respect Life in the mm-hmm. diocese for several years before I worked at Catholic Answers doing marriage prep. And the church has a 6 or 9 month process. What more can we do
right.
to make sure people understand what they are doing, their sound mind and body? So another similarity that came up in the article were the justifications is that when you and I talk about, well, divorce is wrong, you say, well, is divorce okay? No, divorce is sinful. Remarriage after divorce is always wrong mm-hmm. After a civil divorce. And people will say, well, then they'll appeal the hard cases. Mm. They'll say, well, what about someone who's being horribly abused? Are you saying divorce is wrong there?
Right. So that's always the first thing that comes up when we do anything I write or on social media or anything. You talk about divorce being bad for the children or for society
right.
or being wrong just as the church teaches that it's immoral. That's actually a quote from the catechism. Divorce is immoral. There's no caveat to that.
Right.
They will immediately bring up the hard cases. So it's very similar to when we talk about abortion.
Right. People will say abortion is wrong. Well, what about in the case of rape?
Yeah. What about this? And it's always those hard cases that people think, well, wait, you've got to think. Clearly the church has an answer for the hard cases. This is a 2,000-year institution. We know that there are answers to that.
Right.
But the discussion gets derailed so quickly that you find yourself being caught up in all these hard cases unless you know how to pull it back and say, wait a second. First of all, the church has an answer for that.
Right.
But that's not the majority of the cases. We know that most divorces are low conflict divorces.
Mm-hmm.
We know that most women aren't being savagely beaten, and in the cases that they are, or there's something unlivable, canon law says there can be a physical separation.
Right. And, even in similar to how people say, well, what about if the woman's life is in danger?
Mm-hmm.
Say, well, you can engage in a medical procedure that kills the pathology, mm-hmm. but not one of the patients.
Right.
So if a woman has cancer, you can kill the cancer cells, even if the child isn't going to survive that procedure. And you could carry that over to divorce to say, yes, there's a very rare circumstance where you could tolerate physical separation or even legal divorce,
mm-hmm.
but you just cannot act like the marriage doesn't exist anymore by doing something like getting remarried,
right,
for
right,
example.
Right.
And, but people, you're right, this whole, well, I'm going to throw out just this hardest case. It seems like, I want to say to these people, it seems like you're not trying to understand the truth of the issue. You already have. Now, sometimes it's an honest inquiry.
Right.
I think it's important for us to distinguish people who are honest, like, yeah, I think divorce is wrong, but what about this hard case?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the situation. It's still wrong. It's something that's tolerated, like divorce in these horrible situations.
Mm-hmm.
We don't celebrate it.
Right.
We tolerate it.
Right.
In order to avoid some kind of worse evil, which, honestly, that was St. Thomas Aquinas' reasoning for why divorce was tolerated in the Old Testament. That in the Summa Theologia,
yes.
he says, well, why would God give the Israelites the law of divorce in Deuteronomy? And Thomas says, well, it's probably because he knew they had hard hearts and that if he didn't give them divorce, they would just murder their wives.
Right.
Because you can only be convicted of murder on 2 or 3 witnesses. Mm. You spend a lot of time alone with your spouse.
Hmm.
And so God says, look, I know you knuckleheads aren't there yet to do the right thing, so I'll tolerate this. But yeah, I feel like some people, they genuinely are concerned, but others, it's like a smokescreen or derailment, like you said.
Yeah.
It's a way to confuse the issue.
They're trying to shut the conversation down.
Yeah.
And if they can do that, then, they don't have to. Usually, I find it's people that might want to justify their own divorce or their own situation. And it's true with abortion as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I see that a lot. I mean, I've done this now for 5 years and it's the same thing. You probably do with abortion. You see that same thing. So it's the shutting down of the discussion. And I have to tell you, the people who are contributors to Primal Loss, who are the adult children of divorce, they don't put themselves out there because it's kind of a wound that they don't want to be on social media talking about this and getting attacked, because it's still a wound in their life. It's hard to talk about.
Right.
But they will say things like, okay, if we're talking about divorce, they even count it down privately to me. They'll be like, okay, 3, 2, 1. What about abuse? You know, someone's going to say it. They know that that's how it goes. So we have to kind of maybe move away from that, but notice it's the same argument.
But then just to ask people, I think what we need to do is get people in the conversation and ask them, like we do with abortion. Like I say, look, what are the unborn? What are they? What does abortion do to them? Is that right? Let's talk about these questions first, then we'll go to the hard cases. But you have, because if the unborn are not human beings, who cares?
Who cares?
Do whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah.
The same way, if marriage is just a legal contract, who cares? People break contracts all the time or renegotiate them. So we have to ask you, what is marriage?
Right.
What is it? Is it something that we created, or is it something that God made? And I think a lot of people, because we tie, maybe you could see what your thoughts are on this, we tie marriage to like our tax forms and benefits. And some people have this idea that like the state created marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And God is just kind of like, hey, that might be good to put in the Bible.
Right.
When that's not the case.
Right. No, marriage is pre-political.
Right.
It's pre-societal, except for if we're talking about the society in the garden. I mean, that's where marriage was founded by God.
Right. People think that society created marriage.
Right.
But it was marriage that created society.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And how was it made by God? It was made permanent. You know, that it was made permanent. Conjugal and fruitful. So those are the things that we...
I think what people don't understand is they think that, oh, well, divorce, things like that's only for Catholics.
Mm.
Like that's just for Catholic marriage.
No.
Without realizing, no. We believe in a good and natural marriage is lifelong.
Yes.
It's monogamous. It's something God made in nearly every culture on earth. They figured it out.
Yeah.
They recognize that. It's something he put into us. Now, Christ... He raises it to the level of a sacrament, so you can't dissolve it.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right.
But even there, a good and natural marriage is presumed to be valid.
Exactly. And we talk about this in our book because we have three chapters on divorce, because it's a natural law issue.
That's right.
Marriage is a natural law issue. It's a universal, as I like to call it. It's everybody has done it. Everybody marries in every culture, in every religion, in no religion. And so Christ elevated Christian marriage to a sacrament, which is indissoluble by man.
Right.
But even those natural marriages, like two Buddhists or an unbaptized person and a baptized person, are presumed to be permanent. They are expected to be permanent by God.
Right.
Even though in some cases those can be dissolved. But when we're talking about Christian marriage, it is indissoluble by any man.
Only death.
Only death.
Only death.
A sacramental marriage.
That's right.
So... So it's something that we aren't, I guess, I don't know, we're not catechized well on that, but.
But I think what's good is we can focus on the natural law. It's kind of like with abortion. See, we found all the similarities. With abortion, we make a natural law argument. This is a human being. How do we treat human beings? Well, if marriage just is a permanent bond for the good of each spouse and their children, what harms it if we break that? And then with abortion, we can say, hey, what are some empirical effects we've seen? Like post-abortion syndrome. What have we seen happen from abortion? And I think we can do something similar with divorce. And it's like, well, what has happened? Mm-hmm. What have we seen? I think it might've been Peter Kraft who said it. But if there was a drug or a food product that caused the same things that divorce did, like low test scores, depression in children, premature mortality, the FDA would ban it immediately.
Right, exactly. Poverty, I mean, everything, you know. Yeah, they would ban it. But because it is connected to sex and people's, we believe now that sex and marriage is a romance issue rather than a natural law issue or an issue of stability
for the
spouses and the children that come into that union.
Yeah, marriage and sex exist solely to satisfy the preferences of adults.
Yes. So as long as the adults are happy in their romantic relationship, which could be a marriage,
right?
Then, you know, and that's all good. We support them. But as soon as the adult is not happy anymore, because it's connected to sex, that's what Peter Kraft was saying, you know, because it has to do with sex, we are quite fine with them going off to be fine with someone else.
Right.
And that's because we have a completely backwards understanding now since the 60s, you know, of what marriage is.
But what's interesting when you think about adult happiness, like, oh, people should just be happy. It's also this idolizing of autonomy. Because you think in divorce, let's say there's the spouse who wants to leave, they're unhappy if they stay, and the other spouse is unhappy if they leave. Well, whose happiness trumps? It's always the one who wants to leave.
Always the one that wants to
leave. Because our culture says, well, I want them to get to have that. That way I've got my escape valve if I ever need it.
It makes them very uncomfortable to know that you might have to stay in a marriage that doesn't make you blissfully happy.
Right.
And so we don't want that for ourselves, or we hope that there's an escape hatch. And that's really part of that. That's one of those arguments for abortion too. It's like, okay, there's an escape hatch. There's a way out. I'm suffering. This thing has happened that I no longer consent to, or I don't want this.
Right.
And this is going to tie down my future. This is going to change everything in my life if I continue on and with this natural law thing that's happening.
Right.
And I don't want that. And so we tell people, you know, the argument is, well, it's just a once and done thing. You know, it'll hurt. It's a little painful. And then you'll get over it. And then you'll be free.
You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Yeah. And everyone around you will be fine. In fact, everyone will be happier if you do, whether it's the abortion or whether it's the divorce.
One last similarity I noticed. I feel like when sex is involved in a moral issue, rational thinking goes out the window.
Right.
So when a white person says that they're black, they're actually being racist or appropriating a culture. When a man says he's a woman, well, he's right because it has something to do with sex.
Right.
So the rational thinking goes out the window. I believe that if abortion had nothing to do with sex, almost everybody would be against it. Like if we lived in an alternative world where the way you had babies was you put your finger in the machine, it takes your DNA, it grows the baby in a little tank or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people just went in and said, nah, I changed my mind and ripped it apart in the tank, but it had nothing to do with sex.
Right.
It's kind of like, I remember a long time ago, there was someone who did a prank call to veterinarians, animal doctors, asking them, hey, my cat's pregnant. Can you do an abortion? And the vets are like, you're a monster. Like, this is horrible. Yeah. Why would you like, well, look, she can't have a bunch of kittens. We're going to get rid of them anyways. Mm. But when it has something to do with sex, the rational thinking, it just goes out the window. And the same with divorce. Why do people, now sometimes it's a living arrangement you don't want, but a lot of times it's so you can be freed up to have a sexual relationship with a lifelong sexual relationship with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so to be able to protect those preferences, it kind of trumps the rational thinking.
Right. And it's a second chance. That's another one of the arguments too. It's like, well, you know, it's this baby isn't the right time, or it's not the right one, or there's problems with this baby, or, you know, I'm too young or I'm too immature. Exact same thing, you know, with divorce. It's like, well, not this marriage. It wasn't this man or this woman. And unfortunately it didn't work out very well, but there's going to be this other chance to get it right.
Yeah.
So we feel, you know, we feel a reborn. Like, well, we can.
Yeah. So it treats the baby, an abortion treats the baby. It fails to acknowledge the baby is an irreplaceable human being.
Yes.
It's irreplaceable. That cannot be restored.
Right.
And divorce fails to recognize how irreplaceable that marriage is. Because even if you got remarried in the future, you're not continuing the old marriage.
Right.
Well, I mean, canonically, obviously, if you get a civil divorce, you're still married, but you've done grave violence to it. It's not really the same.
Yes. And to the child of a divorce, that, you know, it can't be rectified. I mean, that's a family that has now been destroyed. I mean, it could be rectified if they hopefully would get back together and reconcile at some point. And some people
like
do
you,
down
it would
the
be
line.
Like but it would be like if you cut your arm off and then reattached it surgically and learned to do your fingers again.
Yeah.
You would still have.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like it was before.
Right. Right. You can't destroy a family and expect that, you know, everyone's going to be fine any more than you could expect to have an abortion and think, well, everything's just going to go along fine. And there's no repercussions.
Right.
There will always be the repercussions later on. But we don't. Mm-hmm. But the arguments we use to justify it always are about freedom and, you know, God wouldn't want you to suffer through something you don't want. And once and done, it's over. And it's the same arguments. And once I started realizing that as I went through my divorce work, I'm like, these are exactly the same arguments.
Right.
And it's pretty amazing to think about because we don't think of those as both grave issues. And yet they are.
They are. Well, what are some resources you would recommend people who want to learn more about this issue, learn more about your work so they can understand this better and really confront this important issue?
So I have resources on my website, which is leilamiller.net. That's L-E-I-L-A, miller.net. The book is Primal Loss, which goes through and basically gives the story from the adult children of divorce, from their perspective, not mine, because I didn't know anything about this subject.
Right.
And then just to show that we can get over it, just like people who have abortions, and there can be healing, but there can also be we can dissuade those types of things. I have a follow-up book that was called Impossible Marriages Redeemed. And basically you could take the worst situation,
right,
and God can redeem it if we don't do that aborting of the family,
right,
the aborting of the marriage.
Right.
So we just have to see that, you know, God will, just like with an unwanted pregnancy, God will see it through, mm-hmm, if we trust him and do the right thing and follow God's law.
All right. Well, thank you all so much. And don't forget to visit trenthornpodcast.com. Check out our book, Made This Way, How to Talk About Tough Moral Issues with Your Children. And I hope you guys have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.